This is the Day Zero update for June 15th, 2017. I am Filippo D'Arnolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
And I'm Chris Sologi.
And we're all we could scrounge up today, so yeah, you're stuck with us. So E3 is over, and I'm here podcasting in a bathrobe, because that's what you do at the end of E3.
So, like, we're all just shot to hell.
Yeah, it was a lot to parse, to put it mildly. A lot of the interesting stuff that happened this year was outside of the show floor. Specifically, executives saying things they shouldn't. Yeah. So we're going to talk more about that on Sunday, because we're going to have some news stories. But we will touch on that a bit later on. So first, we should probably wrap up E3 with the obligatory who won discussion, because people expect it, even though I kind of hate it. So let's kind of get started on that. I'll start with you, Chris. So what's your take on it?
I think for me, VR wins, as we get a number of big new titles, as well as a lot of indie stuff. And, seeing Bethesda coming out and saying, okay, we're putting Fallout 4 on a Vive, we're putting Skyrim over on PlayStation VR, and Doom on both of those. Those are three big titles.
Yeah. And they really had the easiest route to a VR presence out of all developers.
Yeah, and even going into, the PlayStation show, there were a number of others that came in that were just really cool looking, like Moss, as we've seen a bit more of that. That is looking like a really cool game, and seeing more of Supermassive's work in VR, expanding the Until Dawn universe a little bit more with the prequel, as well as the new game from the Lucky's Tale people looks pretty cool. It starts to push back on the common thing I see on the internet, which is like, oh, PlayStation VR is going to go the way of the Vita, or it's going to die. It's not going to even be here at E3. And it's like, no, here's full proof. You guys are just stupid.
Yeah.
And you need to stop just shitting on VR just because you don't like it, when there are clearly a bunch of people that do.
Yeah. And, there was also one really big endorsement of VR that kind of just negates that entire argument, and that's Gran Turismo Sport VR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see, especially for me, as having not a great experience with Drive Club, and wanting to see if Polyphony's implementation somehow changes that.
Yeah.
Because I know racing can work, because Trackmania worked really well.
Yeah.
So that was a sort of a third person, kind of a stationary view in a sense. It's like the camera was on like a line going along, and sort of the car itself could move to the left or right, sort of off center in a way, which is not really a normal thing for racing games.
No.
Because you're always stuck in the center, like just like how in first person shooters, and that you're always aiming at the center of the screen.
Hmm.
It'll be interesting to see how that goes as well.
Yeah, we're in the, I would say, probably the second year of VR, I would guess. Full year that PlayStation VR has been out. But, the Vive have been out,
Oculus came out
last year, so I don't think VR is going anywhere at this point. It seems like there's enough developer support that it's going to be sustainable.
And people have to realize that they're working on a different scale for sales. Seems like at least right now, all three companies are very much invested in it and aren't just in a get-rich-quick thing.
Yeah.
They're willing to take the lower sales for the investment in the future of the whole thing, which is sort of where Microsoft's balking of VR kind of rubs me the wrong way a little bit. And just that would be another big name company that could invest and make it more of a legitimate thing. and them sort of balking at it kind of pulls a little bit of a rug out from under the rest of the industry, because we're in sort of a good point where all three companies don't really have any animosity toward each other. They're not paying for exclusives to get back at each other. They're paying for exclusives so those developers can actually make those games and not go under if it doesn't perform as well as it maybe wants to.
Because
we're not getting any of those other third-party headsets. I forget who is the Payday people. They have one that I don't think anybody's heard from in a while. It's like, that's not going to make much of a blip.
Yeah.
Unless it's specifically tying into like the Vive or the Rift ecosystem somehow. So if they're trying to do their own thing, they're going to have big trouble.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure what Microsoft's take on it is, but one of the things I do know is they don't feel that the current headsets really give a great experience. What they want is wireless.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
you gotta get there somehow.
You gotta
right?
kind of have to start somewhere.
Yeah. So, I don't know. If they built the Scorpio, it's powerful enough that it could, and I'm still calling it Scorpio, and it's going to take a while for that to rub off. But, it's powerful enough to do it. I know it will get it eventually. It's just, I don't know. I don't think Microsoft was ready.
Yeah.
Just weren't.
And it's sort of if Microsoft's going on this weird mixed reality thing, it's like, okay, if they're going to go that route, then what does that say about developers trying to port their stuff to that?
Yeah.
Are they going to have to do a lot of work to figure out a way to make it work? And is it that stuff that's made exclusively for it, how is that going to transition back? That's what we're seeing a lot of, is games that were exclusive sort of ending their exclusivity period and going elsewhere. Like Batman VR is on Vive now.
Yeah.
There's a couple others that have... Super Hot's obviously was exclusive to Rift for a little while.
Now it's
came
going
to Vive
PSVR.
Recently and it's coming to PSVR in a couple months.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's something to watch. So, how about you, Pat?
I think Nintendo won narrowly because Microsoft made a pretty good showing too. And obviously the mic drop moment on backward compatibility had a big role in that. But overall, I think that nobody really set the bar that high this year. But Nintendo just came out and started showing game after game after game for the Switch, and made it clear that, yes, there is a pipeline and it's going to be we're not going to starve you this time. And, you know, based on the last two generations of Nintendo platforms, that was a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't think Nintendo had really been the same since the Big Four that they released for the GameCube.
Yeah.
And they'd been kind of gun-shy about steady releases ever since, but they're starting to figure out that Nintendo games are all not competing with themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the pipeline going into next year, I mean, they're swearing by a 2017 release for Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and that was one of the best-looking games of the show. Yeah. Mario Odyssey, I'm still not sold on, but it does look really solid. Yoshi and Kirby, of course, and so on and so forth. And then there's a Fire Emblem game, you know, a proper Fire Emblem game in the pipeline, a proper Pokemon game in the pipeline. I'm really happy to be a Switch owner right now.
Yeah.
And if they can keep that rolling, you know, if they go out next year and have an E3 like they did this year, then I think the Switch is absolutely ready to roll.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's made a hell of a good first impression.
Yeah. I mean, Nintendo's big problem this year was getting people to understand that, you know, this was a platform that should have their money. And I think they did a pretty good job of showing why you really should probably consider investing in a Switch if you don't have one.
Yep.
So, yeah, good job on that. And, of course, if they keep the momentum going with the three or four directs that they do a year, you know, it's like that's just going to keep the, you know, the client base growing, I guess. As long as they can make them fast enough, they seem to be selling them as fast as they can make them.
Yeah, and they acknowledge that there are stocking issues, but they're doing everything they can to churn them out. And I believe them.
Yeah.
I mean, they...
Yeah, I don't think they're artificially limiting them this time.
No, this is genuine limitation.
Yeah.
And it's good seeing that after the Wii U had trouble getting its market penetration.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just really happy with Nintendo, and I'm happy for Nintendo.
Yeah.
They've picked up a big win here.
Yep, they really have. So I guess I'll have to chime in here. Well, I guess I'll say that the winner of E3 for me was Microsoft. Just in the sheer amount of variety and quality that we saw on there, a lot of those short little demonstrations there didn't really do justice to the games themselves. Looking a little bit later on that Darwin Project game that looked like Hunger Games, remember that, with the really annoying announcer? Yeah, there's a lot more there than you really would think.
That seems like a weird thing to announce right after PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah, because it's similar, but not quite. It's a smaller scale.
I don't know, do you get an angry man yelling at you about how the match is going?
That's the thing. The person yelling was actually the guy controlling the basically the hazards. He's in this little pod that goes around, and you can basically change hazards. You can make one of the players marked. Basically, you'd be the showrunner.
So it's kind of like Hunger Games.
Yeah, it's like, pretty much exactly
like that. The guy that, or the people that control the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I had to set all certain, like, traps and such.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. It's pretty cool. That really didn't come across in the demonstration that they showed over there, because it was, you know, it was short and stuff. But, yeah, they had a lot of variety there. I saw a lot of stuff that I liked. I saw a lot of stuff that made me happy that I still have my Xbox. Their big problem is the Xbox One X and trying to get people to understand that it's okay to not buy it. That's the thing. People will not buy it because it's $500, but they should not buy it because it might not be right for them. That's the thing that they're...
People are... This new hardware, I have to buy it now.
Yeah. People are deeply uncomfortable when a product gets released that is not aimed at them.
Yeah. And, it's like, it's going to be coming out. It will run games better than the other ones. They'll look nicer. They'll be able to run in 4K. But every single one of the games we saw at that show is going to run on a base Xbox One. And there's no Scorpio exclusive. So, even Anthem. So, yeah, I think it's they have a marketing problem to try to... basically tell people why they should buy it and why they shouldn't. That's the big one.
Yeah, especially when you have your show essentially talk about the $250 S right before you announce the $500 X.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that thing's twice as much as this other thing I can get.
Yeah, and it's four times the console, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... you know, I mean, if you price out a PC to be a similar spec, you're spending more than $500. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's...
but you know that going into a PC, you got to invest a good bit of money if you want to get the good returns.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm very, very bullish on the Xbox One X. I think it's going to do...
Oh, it looks great.
It's going to do great. One, it's a really nicely designed console. It's super small. They said it was smaller than the One S, and
yeah, it's
definitely
the smallest Xbox ever.
Yeah. I don't know how they managed
it. My comment about it looking like a PS2 without the ridges, like the original PS2,
yeah.
I've heard that a lot this week on podcasts.
Yeah. It's actually good look. Smaller than an Xbox 360 Super Slim.
Yeah. It's a good look, and I like it. And eventually one of them will be making its way over to my house. Eventually. But I mean, that's the thing. I'm in no hurry. I'm in no hurry because I know that every single game that I buy digitally or physically, for that matter, is going to play just fine on my regular Xbox, and when I get the One X, well, I'll get more out of it. Plus,
and
if I'm going
to
be buying,
celebrate indeed.
Yeah, and then, well, then I also have the thing that, yeah, I have a pretty decent gaming PC, so when I buy Forza X, Forza 7, I'll just be able to play the PC version and have a better experience there. So, yeah, it's a win-win all around.
Microsoft did a really good job of depicting the Xbox as sort of a big tent brand.
Yeah.
Like, there is an Xbox One for you.
Yeah.
There is an Xbox experience for you, no matter what your budget, no matter what your, you know, what style of gaming you're geared toward. And that's what they had to do.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the volume of games was quite what it needed to be to bounce back from giving up the entire first half of the year to Sony and Nintendo, but they really did respectably.
Yeah. And the important thing is that they managed to make a case that even if your ideal Xbox One is no Xbox One at all, you can still get a lot of those games on Windows 10. So, yeah, it's a win for them. So let's talk a little bit about Sony again, because apparently they held back a little bit for this presentation, if you want to call it that.
I said on Smash Pad that I didn't want to dignify their conference with a response. I was actually talking with a friend of mine over at IGN yesterday, and the theory came up that they just care a lot less about E3 since they've got PSX now, and they're kind of just loading up for that. But I think if that's really their mentality, then they are seriously discounting the importance of E3.
Yeah.
It is still the only time that you're guaranteed to have the undivided attention of your audience.
Yeah, it's the first time of the year where you're going to get that.
Yeah.
I think PSX, you're almost guaranteed to get all of your audience as well. Those are the same sort of people that are going to tune in for the press conferences at E3. It's also going to tune in for the keynote at PSX or be there themselves.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised how many people still think E3 is the only big trade show.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that PSX isn't important. I'm not saying they should downplay it or anything. But pulling punches at E3 is never a good strategy, period. And obviously we've talked at length over the years of how relative the concept of winning E3 can be. I think the last couple of years, Sony has found a very distinctive way to lose E3. Nintendo and Microsoft both gained a considerable amount of ground on them this year. And it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back from that. And they went into it with a black eye from Jim Ryan talking about backward compatibility not being important.
Yeah.
And then Phil Spencer lit him up for it, as Phil Spencer tends to do.
Yeah.
I just don't think Sony got anything out of this E3.
No, I don't think they did. A lot of the titles that they were showing were a little too far out to really make much of a difference, because they're titles that are probably going to end up being shown again at PSX.
Yeah.
So I don't know. If Sony wants to focus so much on PSX, why be at E3 at all? You know, if you're not gonna come to play, don't come at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's about all we could really say about that. One thing I will say is, if Sony does decide to drop out, well, I'm sure Ubisoft will be more than happy to step up into their time slot.
Yeah.
Because, they had a pretty strong showing. I mean, not all the games I saw there were, you know, stuff that was aimed at me, but the quality was certainly there. The presentation level was there.
I would say that Ubisoft's show this year was almost as good as a Big Three presentation. And it was, I thought they were going to hurt without Aisha Tyler there to drive their message home, but by following the formula of the hardware manufacturers, they went out and had a very strong showing.
Yeah.
And it would have only taken maybe one or two games that were aimed squarely at me for to probably sway me and get me to declare them the winners.
Hmm.
So, yeah, big props to Ubisoft for putting on a good show.
Yeah. As it was, there were a few games that were non-offensive, which is definitely an improvement considering what the Crew originally was.
Yeah, the Crew 2 looks like something I might have to play at some point.
Yeah.
And I went into E3 not even considering it.
Yeah.
Like based on the original game, the Crew 2 was pretty much a non-starter.
Hmm.
But I really like what Ivory Tower's doing here. I knew they were talented all along, but if they want to just step forward and give us our, you know, ideal racing sandbox, I can't hate on that.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to focus more on motorsport in all of its forms than, you know, focusing on cops and robbers, basically.
Hopefully it doesn't force you to diversify.
Because
I think that would be a misstep for that game. Just let players go out there and explore the corner, the discipline of racing that they want to focus on, and make of the game what they will.
Yeah,
that would be the perfect approach to the Crew 2.
Yeah. So that's it for the initial who won E3 discussion. Let you decide on your own, you know, what your thoughts are, but that's been our takes on it. So let's talk a little bit about E3 trends, because there were a couple.
Yeah.
First of all, the passion of developers. That's a thing that we saw a lot of on display this year.
EA really drove it home. Ubisoft did a good job.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff from Microsoft as well. You know, we had especially EA with Joseph Fares talking about A Way Out. And I don't know if that's going to be the game for me, but I definitely appreciate his enthusiasm and his passion for it. And it looks like he's making a very, very unique game. So,
yeah,
can't fault him for that.
Yeah. I also thought pretty much everything that was going on at EA really spoke to a collection of studios that were not being abused by publishers, which is something that EA really needed to address.
Yeah, even Ghost. So, I mean, they seem like they're making what they want to make. It might not be for me, but they're enjoying what they're doing, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. And I still think that they've kind of drawn their AI inspiration from your average i5 Rush Hour.
Or just not bothered at all yet. Because, it had issues.
Oh, I call it like I see it.
Yeah.
But, there was also the guy from Ubisoft, the lead designer on the Mario and Rabbids game.
Yeah.
Was almost brought to tears just by the fact that the crowd wasn't shitting on his game because the Rabbids were in it.
I mean, I think it was more that one of his heroes, Miyamoto, was giving him praise for his game.
Yeah.
See, I didn't actually see the timing of the image. I just...
Yeah, that was when Miyamoto was sort of praising the partnership with Ubisoft in the game.
Yeah.
Talking about how good it looked, and then they show him, he starts breaking out tears, and then they keep lingering on him. It's like...
Yeah.
Yo, you got your message. Like, yeah. Oh, boy. Stop torturing him.
I didn't catch that part, but yeah, I saw the picture after the fact. And yeah, and it really does look properly good.
Yeah, so, it looks like a cross between XCOM and Mario RPG. That's a comparison I've heard a lot of this week.
Yeah, and it's got the Nintendo DNA. Like, it's not doing more than it has to do.
Yeah.
It's not bogging itself down, so... Yeah.
I think that
I've got really high hopes for that one.
Yeah, it's. I think that was one of the biggest surprises of E3 is that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this weird concept that we've heard of doesn't look like a total disaster. So, yeah, and despite the fact that the rabbits are in it, I love that the game is self-aware enough about that. That's one of the great parts about it.
Yeah.
So, We got that.
And Ubisoft seems to understand just how much of a grenade they dodged.
Yep. that could have gone very badly, yeah, but it didn't. So, yeah. And then the other thing we can probably agree on is that killing Nazis is a language everybody can understand. Yes. There was a lot of that going on this year at E3, between Call of Duty and Wolfenstein 2, and probably a few more other WW2 games on the show. But
speaking of developers that are really showing a passion for what they're doing.
Yeah. Holy crap, though. What did the machine games ever know how to make a ridiculously ridiculous game? But yeah, it looks great. I want to play it, shoot some Nazis, and drop acid, because apparently you can do that. Don't know why, but okay.
Well, you consider the setting, lots of people would probably have to be strung out to cope with that.
Could be. Mm. Yeah, it's supposedly a modern setting with, where Germany has won the war, apparently. Something they set up in the first game, so point that out.
Mm. Totally different tone this time around, though.
Yeah, definitely. Apparently, they're very well aware of the political climate in the U.S. right now.
Yeah, and they're really turning B.J. Blazkowicz into the video game hero that we need in 2017.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can't wait to play that, and it's coming later this year. So, looking forward to
it. It's kind of amazing how more relevant B.J. Blazkowicz is in 2017 than, say, Duke Nukem. Like how they couldn't ever find a way to modernize him and make him palatable for, you know, the audience now.
Yeah.
So just, oh, I remember playing Duke Nukem 3D. Let's play yet another new version of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not really gone well for him. But part of that, I think, is because Duke Nukem is just a caricature of the typical 80s action movie hero.
Yeah.
They have to find some way of putting that aside and making him something else.
Yeah. Whereas B.J. Blazkowicz was just basically a typical soldier. He didn't really have much of a character up until recently. So, yeah.
They just kind of filled in the blanks sensibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have that whole point where they put Duke Nukem in. What was it? The People Can Fly shooter?
Bulletstorm.
Yeah. Hmm. Where they literally don't change anybody else's dialogue or cutscenes. It's just him.
Shove
saying,
him in there.
Yeah. It's like, this is how awkward and weird he is.
Yep.
And it's kind of amazing that the other characters are inexplicably shitting on him, even though they're not specifically doing that.
Yeah.
Because it's not the character that they're talking about.
Yeah. And yet, in the context of Bulletstorm, that actually manages to work.
Yeah.
that's the strange part about it. So, yeah.
Then they charge for it.
Yeah.
And make it like a feature of the game.
Yeah, you have to use DLC. So, hurry for that. $5 for your awkward Duke Nukem cameo. Yeah. So, let's get into some of the E3 moments. Because there were a few. I'll highlight the first one being during the Microsoft keynote where they had the Ori 2 reveal. Full title of that, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, by the way. Should point out, it looks great. That presentation was exceptional. I don't think I would be the only one who would say that they were a little choked up at during that. It was great.
It was another theme of E3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you haven't played the original Ori, by the way, just what the hell are you waiting for? Go get it now. It's on PC. It's on Xbox One. It's not on PS4. I wonder why. But, yeah. There was that. And then, of course, during the Ubisoft, where Michel Ancel came out on stage to a reaction that nearly brought the roof down.
Yeah. And he just looked relieved.
It's like, yeah, people remember. I think he looked a little bit more than relieved, but yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good moment. The crowd acknowledging that, yes, we're still interested in this game. Yes. Bring it out as soon as possible. Well, they're calling it Beyond Good and Evil 2, and it's a prequel, so, you know, that's a little strange. They could have called it Before Good and Evil. That would have been just as valid. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's a prequel with none of the characters.
None of the characters. Yeah. I think Jade's mom is in there, though, so we'll have to wait and see there. And then during the giant bomb late night after E3, they had Phil Spencer on, and one of the moments was him calling out Bill Ryan about his cross-network policy.
Jim Ryan is the guy from Sony.
Jim Ryan. Why did I say Bill Ryan? He's another asshole I don't know about. Anyway. Jim Ryan.
Okay, then.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I know Bill Ryan. It's a sports writer for the Boston Globe.
Oh, that's
for decades, which obviously you're referring to him.
Yeah, okay. All right, if you say so. But, yeah, so Jim Ryan
is the guy who made the backward compatibility slip up that Microsoft ran down Sony's throat at their press conference.
Yeah, well, he can't shut up, apparently. He said basically as PR-y a speak as you could get, that the reason that cross-network play for Minecraft and Rocket League isn't enabled is because they don't feel that Microsoft is capable of keeping the player base safe.
I don't want to hear that from somebody at Sony.
Do I need to remind you what happened in 2011? Yeah.
So why wasn't this guy in Ball and Gag for the whole show?
I don't know. But yeah, Phil Spencer lit him up for that. It's about he was, of course, professional and diplomatic about it, but you could tell by his demeanor that he was like, why do we even have to have this discussion? this is not something we're bad at, you know what I mean?
He should have simply said that people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
That would have been one way to do it, but... Yeah, I mean, Psyonix have said they could have cross-network play running in an hour. They've got the code done.
Yeah.
They have it working.
It has cross-network play for Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah. Sony won't give them the green light to launch it and have the full cross-network play across PC, Xbox One, and Steam. And PS4, rather. But they could. They're ready. They've got it done. But Sony's being a dick.
Yeah.
I also recommend watching that whole interview, because there's a lot of great stuff about the fact that, Phil Spencer and Xbox doesn't really care where you play Xbox games as long as you play Xbox games.
Good attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. So, good stuff there. Alrighty, so I guess
it was also an E3 moment when he called Jim Ryan out on stage with the Xbox legacy backward compatibility.
Yeah, he didn't actually say so much, no, but just that announcement in itself with the flubber blob and saying, yeah, Crimson Sky is going to be playable. And the networking that they're going to have to do to get that to actually work is going to be interesting. I can't wait for that feature to roll out in early access so I can see what it's all about. But
I'm just hoping it works the exact same way as Xbox 360 backward compatibility, because that will be a good day.
Yeah. And the other side of that that I've found interesting and heard being talked about this week is that 360 and original Xbox games could potentially come to Windows, because they're just virtual machines. There's no reason that they couldn't. That would be an interesting and very customer-centric way of,
Yes.
keeping your platform alive.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of licensing issues involved with that. as far as putting those all on a new platform that they weren't necessarily signed up for in the first place.
Yeah. I would imagine that initially, if that does start to happen, it will probably just be Microsoft's own games. I'm sure
that's a problem. Well, I was going to say which are already on PC, but that's just the Xbox One stuff.
Yeah, Xbox One stuff.
And they can always just write enough checks to make that go away.
Yeah. I do expect that the Halo, probably the Master Chief Collection, will end up showing up on PC at some point. Either that or they roll out the backwards compatibility stuff with all of the originals. So that would be interesting.
Yeah, they probably don't want to go back and try and fix Master Chief Collection at this point. I would imagine that the last update has been quite a while.
Well, it's been... works fine. Did they fix it? I don't know. I haven't looked at it.
I've heard of a lot of issues still going on with multiplayer and co-op.
Yeah. Damn it. Well, I think that one.
Halo 1 on Xbox Live would have been glorious.
Yeah. You had one job.
Yeah, and like the lack of info on where people are playing the multiplayer stuff, you can end up spending, 10, 15 minutes finding out, there's nobody playing Halo 1.
Yeah.
Because people just said, fuck this, when, they weren't fixing the multiplayer stuff.
Yeah.
So there's probably no multiplayer audience in that game, really.
Yeah.
Except for friends that are specifically saying, hey, let's go try this out.
Yeah. But if you bring PC Xbox Live to the original Halo 1, then you'd know people would be there, because that's what they'd be logging in for.
I was trying to think, the anniversary collection had that. Though those are more versions of those maps for...
Yeah, for 360.
Four? Mm. Was it Reach? I forget which version they ported those maps to.
I think it was four.
Or did four use Reach's multiplayer?
Ooh.
No, four had its own multiplayer.
Yeah, four had its own.
So I remember people being mad about it, them turning into Call of Duty.
Yeah. So, let's get into our top games of E3. I picked three. You could pick as many as you want, but whatever. So I have three games that really stood out for me. In no particular order, I got to bring up Bloodstained, because it was shown on the show floor. It looks amazing.
It's still a one-year violation.
It's still a one-year violation, but, well, I have to give them a pass on that, because they didn't show it at any of the... at any of the press conferences. It was just on the show floor. So,
well, that's just Kickstarter.
Yeah. Kickstarter and
like development cycles. Like, you got to put a date on this, even though you don't know your budget or your tools and such.
Yeah. But, they seem to know at this point, like, how it's going, and they seem to have a better idea of when it will actually be coming out. So hopefully that last delay is the last one. So we'll see.
And that's the one that has like actual 3D environments in the background.
Yeah.
I like the somewhat 3D stuff from like Symphony of the Night.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember seeing that. It was like, it kind of looks like better looking Symphony of the Night sprites, but the background's all 3D and it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. The characters are all 3D models, but they're drawn to look like sprites. So that looks...
I remember looking at it, it looked jarring at first.
Yeah.
I'm sure I get used to it, but that was sort of a weird thing.
Yeah. So there's that. And then, of course, Crackdown 3, a game I've been waiting for a long, long time. we saw it this year. It was shown on the show floor. It was playable. By all accounts, yes, this is the Crackdown game you have been waiting for. Orbs are a thing. So that solves my worry right there. There are orbs. So that means I will be playing it forever. Yeah, well, that's how you gain powers in that game. You go find these orbs and they'll like boost your stats. So the more orbs you find, the more freakishly huge you get. And the more freakishly huge you get, the more heavier objects you can pick up and throw like weapons.
So. Yeah, it's kind of supposed to be how whatever you're doing, you get better at that.
Yeah.
So you drive a bunch, you get better at that.
Yeah.
It was so shitty, the original, I just didn't bother with it.
Yeah.
It's like you get better with your agility stuff. You can just run and jump everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck the driving.
Yeah, for me, cars were just projectiles, so I didn't bother using them. I just jumped around everywhere because that was more fun. So that was that. Looking forward to having Terry Crews yell at me a lot. So
yeah, because he's an actual character in the game.
Yep.
Like, he's not the narrator, commander sort of thing.
Yeah, he's the commander. So there's that. And, of course, I didn't think I was going to put this on there, but after looking at it a lot more, Forza 7. Yeah. This looks like a very big improvement over Forza 6. Not just the weather effects and all of that, but the in-car perspectives that they're doing, and the way they're implementing stuff like camera shake, the way that the cars themselves will, have their own rattling and material techniques. Looks like it's going to be a really, really cool game. And it's coming out on the Xbox One X, the regular Xbox One, and Windows 10. So I'll be playing that on Windows 10. Because I know I'll be able to turn the settings up and have a better experience on that one. So But apart from those...
You don't need an Xbox One X to do that.
Nope. So there's that. And,
hey, Phil. Have they said anything about settings in games on Xbox One like they do on PS4 Pro?
They haven't mentioned it. That's, I think, going to be up to the developers. Okay. But what I think they're going to be doing is that stuff is just going to happen dynamically.
And yeah, because I know there are PS4 Pro games that have, like, oh, do you want to focus on better frame rate versus better resolution?
Yeah.
I would be curious to see if there's going to be that option in Xbox One games.
Yeah. And it's like, if you're going to be
Xbox
running...
Xbox One X is just going to give you all of the things.
Yeah, well, what I think is going to do is...
1080p.
Well, I'm talking about for 1080p specifically, like, you're going to make it a more super sampled resolution upgrade or make it 60 frames per second? What?
Yeah, they're just going to render the game at 4K and then downsample it back. That's what I think they're going to be doing for that. But
They haven't said anything about dashboard stuff either, have they?
No, details on that haven't
just
really
avatars.
Come out yet.
That's the only thing
just
we
the
know.
Avatars. Yeah. I mean, you can have your avatar in a wheelchair, or your avatar can be pregnant, or you can be freakishly fat. So that will be, if you want an avatar that better represents you in whatever way you want, well, it seems like you're going to be able to do that now, and I don't
then it
really
won't
see
do
a
anything.
Point in it. So
it's like, I don't even know where to go find the avatars at this point.
Yeah.
I occasionally buy the free avatar clothing, but usually that goes through, like, the Edge browser.
Yeah.
It's like, log in again. Like, what?
Yeah.
I'm already logged in. Why can't you just make that work?
Yeah. I often just see it in the Xbox app where there's, like, avatar stuff showing up. So, but yeah, that's me. How about you, Pat?
Well, obviously, the easy one on this list is Dragon Ball FighterZ. I just really think they've got a winner there. It's a license that everybody knows with a developer that's perfect for that license. A lot of people are going to be learning about Arc System Works who probably aren't ready for them. And it'll be interesting to see how the fighting game community as a whole reacts, because apparently people have been going on Steam and buying Revelator just at a ridiculous level in preparation for this game, which is a good thing. So we'll see how that plays out. Obviously, I like Xenoblade Chronicles 2. It really feels like they're tapping into Grandia's energy, which plays well with me. I'm really starting to believe it's going to make this year. And as complete as it looked at E3, I'm really looking forward to that one. It's just, we need more good, at least semi-turn-based RPGs.
Yeah.
And this one's looking really solid. And then finally, Dissidia NT. I've only been hyping this up on the show for like 2 years. So it's good to see that it's got a console version in the works. Well, it's always been in the works, but that they're ready to finally present it.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully it makes that early 2018 timetable. And, yeah, I can see that one being good on stream. I can see that one being good when you have a regular group of players to team up with.
Yeah.
They just really got to get that character roster filled out because there aren't all that many offbeat choices yet. Even though, I mean, I
think that's probably the only reason that the console version is going to be a 2018 release is they want all of the arcade,
all the time release stuff done.
So,
yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
It looks like a great game, Brennan.
Yeah.
Not really my style, but I'll definitely watch it.
I will play the hell out of that game.
Yeah.
How about you, Chris?
Well, for me, Matterfall is a big title for me. Having loved every other Housemarque game, this one very much looks like a mix of, say, Outland and Resogun, in a sense. It's stylistically very much like Resogun was. A little less of the boxily stuff, but very much just having this side-scrolling action going on, though it's not wrapping around like a Defender game, but also having the platforming and the need to actually shoot at platforms to solidify them or to block shots by solidifying a platform above you, things like that. It seems like it's a really well-designed game, and it's going to be fun, just like Nex Machina, which comes out next week.
Yeah.
They've got two great-looking games coming out this summer that is going to be a huge time waster for me.
Yeah, Housemarque, no. They've been consistent. That's one thing I'll give them.
Yep. And it's nice to see them just continue to just make games.
Yep.
And the cool thing about Nex Machina is that that is self-published.
Yeah.
So it's also going to be on PC for that reason. And Matterfall is Sony published.
Yeah.
So it's PS4. Yeah. And it's been nice seeing that because all we had was, it was either like a Gamescom announcement or something like that, where it's just like this Mega Man-esque arcade teaser. It's like, well, what the hell is that? What the hell are they going to do with like a Mega Man kind of game?
Yeah.
Because I don't really care for my Mega Man, but obviously it's nothing like Mega Man, so that's the best thing. As for my second game, I picked the Shadow of the Colossus remake. That is a game that means a lot to me. It's, if I had to sit down and put together like a top five games of all time, the original would probably be on that list. This is very much a game that they've gone through and remade all of the assets, just makes it look like a fantastic game.
Yeah.
On par with most of the games coming out today.
Yeah.
And this fall and next year. And that's an amazing feat for a game that is, what, 11 years old at this point?
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, and a game that, when it came out, had some technical difficulties.
Yeah, it was technically too much for the platform it was running on.
Yeah. Fog, frame rate issues, things like that, but it still played really well. Then they did the remaster last gen on the PS3, and it was very good. I think one of the main issues is that it still had a little bit of frame rateiness to it. The controls weren't absolutely perfect, but for the most part it was there, and it played really well for me. But seeing them actually sort of finally do justice to this game, make it the most ideal version possible, is something that's going to be really great to see.
Yeah. It's a game that I fully expect will have a PS4 Pro component to it.
Yeah. And I've been seeing a lot of people like balking at it, like, oh, there's no new Colossus in there. It's like, it doesn't really need that. It's like, yeah, they cut that stuff out, but that's because it wasn't working out well. And they combined some of them into some of the ones that are in the game. Because what Ueda wanted with each of the Colossus in there is that they would use unique mechanics or solutions to defeating them. So as you've played it, you notice that you really don't repeat much of anything between them. Other than just the act of climbing and stabbing them with the sword. Other than that, you go from each one. It's like you're just wondering what weird thing are you going to do next. And it's like that bird one that's over the lake is one of my favorites in that game, because it's just a ridiculous sense of speed. Just riding around on top of this, just holding on to the fur for dear life. Because if you don't, you will just fall off back down to the water and have to start over again. It's a crazy sensation of speed that very few games ever matched in that sense. And most games don't even try that sort of big boss thing. So then you get stuff like crap, what was the Platinum game that got shut down? Canceled?
Scalebound. Scalebound. Yeah.
That was sort of trying something like that. And that just turned into like a weird Lost Planet, shoot the glowing spots.
Basically.
And it's like, okay. There's not really much here that's interesting. But yeah, Shadow of the Colossus is going to be a big game for me. And the other one I picked, Mario and Rabbids Battle Kingdom. Not only because it was a big surprise, but also because the style of gameplay is something I really liked in the XCOM games. But the way the XCOM games are kind of about survival in this sort of long campaign, trying to see if you can make it the whole way, inevitably I just burn out on it. And so hopefully this game isn't necessarily designed in that way. Designed so you can actually finish it and not just stress out so much from seeing, oh, I lost two of my soldiers that I've been building up for 15 missions now, and now I'm screwed. That sort of thing. And it's just a really good use of both sets of characters as and having this interesting kind of spin on the two-tone system of movement, where it's you sort of have the one-step movement you can have and then take an action, or you can use up both of those options for a longer sprint. Or here you can just have them throw you across the map. And that leaves you open for an attack. And they showed a cool thing during that trailer, the demo, whatever it is, where you can have your character sort of do a dash as they're running around and dash into an enemy, do damage, find another one of your characters, throw you back over behind them for a second attack as a way of like double damage on enemies, which is pretty cool. And yeah, that's going to be an interesting game to see how it turns out since it's nearly done and is out in a few months.
Yeah, it's coming out in August.
Yeah. I was kind of thinking of a top three for VR as well. Skyrim VR is something I've seen some of the E3 gameplay that's been out there, and it's sort of crazy to think about how different that game is going to be when you have move controllers with it and have you're not just aiming at the center of the screen. So there was the one video, and the guy was using the like fire beam. He was able to sweep it across the room without having to necessarily look around the room at enemies and just take them out. It's like, that's really ridiculously awesome. That's way different than just, oh, you aim at the center of the screen and then you spin your view around. Hopefully you do it right. But it's like, you have ways of attacking or blocking or, you know, shooting the bow that are way different than what the original game was built on.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how that goes. It'd be cool if there's more physics interaction with objects rather than like, oh, you just have a bunch of cheese wheels. You go up to a hill and you just select on the menu just to drop. And it just all drops statically. It's like if you could actually just throw stuff around or set up that thing. But just like, oh, I pick up all this stuff. I throw it in this cart or whatever, or you build something to block it off. Then you, you know, release all the cheese wheels your own way. It's like being able to have more physical interaction with the world would be a huge thing if they actually build that into it. But what they've shown so far is really cool.
Yeah.
As for other stuff, like Moss is just something that looks like a really interesting character in the world. Because if you watch the trailer, there's one point where the mouse is looking in the water and you see like a mask looking down at it, which I believe is the headset where you are looking down at them. And so it realizes, oh, there's this thing that's looking at me. That's weird. And then you are sort of helping it along the ways, like moving some obstacles while also attacking enemies and doing other stuff like that. It's sort of a really cute and cool little game that could be big for that system. And the other one, I think Doom actually could be a really cool game. Because if you don't know what the story is with that, it's not the original Doom. Essentially, you're one of the last humans left on the station before before the demons all take over. I believe you die, and then your consciousness, your mind, is transferred into a robot. And so your task is trying to get the facility up and running and take down demons along the way. So, like, this weird little story that, you know, like when you saw, like, them putting the battery into the fuse or whatever, the fuse box, whatever it was. That's what that whole thing is for. And that's why he had, like, these weird suction cup hands, claws. And it seems like you can sort of change up what the hands are, obviously, for, to handle weapons or whatnot. And it seems like a really cool way of adapting that to VR. So, like, Bethesda came out somehow and delivered two of the biggest VR games. I guess Fallout 4 is also there, but it's not on PSVR, so I don't really care. I don't expect it to come to PSVR because...
that game's already kind of messed up as it is on PS4, so...
And I imagine a lot of work goes into Skyrim because if it's the remastered version they're using, that ran at 30 FPS. So it's like, okay, you got to turn down a lot of stuff to get it up to 60 or 90.
Yeah.
That's why I saw a lot of people like, well, why don't I get this for free if I bought it on the remaster? It's like, because it's a pretty different game.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to play the VR version without the VR.
Yeah.
That'd be a worse version than what you paid your $60 for.
Yep.
That thing's still going to be 60 on PSVR, so.
Yeah. That's an expensive VR game.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to keep trotting it out.
People will buy Skyrim, they'll keep making it.
It's like, okay, I'm not going to spend $60 on every version here. I'm just going to wait it out and see how it goes. Either get it on sale, or this comes along and it's like, okay, that's made my choice for me.
Yeah.
There's a version in a. That comes out in a way that I really want to play.
So, all right. So let's wrap this up. Anybody have final thoughts on E3 as a whole, or some stuff that we didn't get to mention that you really want to?
Not one of the stronger E3s overall. I felt just between Sony sandbagging, if that's what you want to call it, and Microsoft and Nintendo doing respectably, but not necessarily shooting the lights out. I was, I still feel good about owning the systems I own, but I didn't really come out feeling that much better about it. And so it feels like E3 was a giant missed opportunity for just about everybody.
Hmm. Yeah, I'd say for me, like the big theme of E3 was no surprises. There were a couple surprises, but for the most part, everything we saw announced was either stuff we already knew about or we figured was obvious. Like, yeah, hey, yeah. Forza 7, yeah. Big surprise. Ori 2, big surprise. You know, the stuff like Shadow of the Colossus is a bit of a surprise because it's like, that's not necessarily a game you expect to get remade, at least to that full extent. Hmm. Maybe like another remaster for it, just port that PS3 remaster over. But that's kind of a surprise. Like Monster Hunter World was a surprise. Like them finally making Monster Hunter for the other consoles.
Yeah.
Especially when we hear the news that Double Cross is not coming over to the US on Switch.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, so this is the only console version you're going to get. and it's the one that, which I imagine Nintendo's going to be like, okay, we're just going to pay for this. We're going to do all the localization because fuck you for not doing this work. It's going to be like the Square situation where they force Nintendo's hand to pay for the distribution, publishing, and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, like, no surprises. Came out of E3, like, oh, that's everything we expected. Nothing really surprising.
Yeah. sorry about that. Yeah, there wasn't really a whole heck of a lot that I could say really, you know, knocked my socks off at E3. There were a lot of good games that looked really nice and I do want to play, but nothing that made me go, oh my god, that's astonishing.
Yeah.
Except for maybe, you know, Wolfenstein 2, but that was, oh my god, for another reason. That was just because of how just bananas it was. But, yeah. E3 this year, I saw a lot of cool hardware. That was, if you didn't check that out, there was quite a... Razer had a pretty big presence there, and they announced some very nice SF5 sticks. So that might be worth checking out.
I saw something about an $800 GT Spork wheel.
Thrustmaster.
Yeah. Yep, Thrustmaster.
TGT.
Yep. So, yeah, it's expensive. $800 Assassin's Creed Collector's Edition. That was unexpected, but okay.
Yeah. At the very least, they're not going to flood shelves with that.
No, it's all, they're only like making a thousand of those.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, not a whole heck of a lot that I would say really surprised or, you know, knocked my socks off. I did see, when going through the list of stuff that was supposedly there, I did see a Data East Classics collection.
Ooh.
That seems to have gotten overlooked. No platform announcements or anything. It's
that's
like,
probably
I don't
why.
Think anybody even went and looked at it. So, yeah, if that was actually there.
Depending on what's in that, I'm all over it.
Yeah. Well, I'm
wonder if it's like
to,
that Wii collection they released.
Yeah, it's it might be that, or maybe a different one, same based on that. Either way, if they put Bad Dudes and a bunch of other, you know, good Data East stuff in there, like Too Crude, that would be fun to have in there. Yeah, if they bring that to PS, yep. Dark Seal, wouldn't mind having that either. But yeah, if they bring that to PS4 as a download, hell, I'd be over that.
Yeah.
$20 for that?
Yeah. I'd pay $20 for that for, I don't know, 10 or 20 really good arcade games that I remember playing a lot of. So just make the trophies, like, not stupidly difficult. Like, don't make me play 50,000 times for a trophy, PopCap. Yeah, anyways. So I guess that's it. E3 week is done. We will be back Sunday, and hopefully more, you know, cogent than we are at the moment. So yeah, until then, I'm Filippo D'Analfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
And I'm Chris Sologi.
And we'll see you Sunday.